Donaldson, and I'll be conducting this interview today on behalf of the One Another Project and the Wellcome Trust. The date is the 14th of October 2009. If you could please state your full name, your age, if that's okay, and where you're from.
I'm Emma Burns, I'm 30 and I'm from Darlington.
And how are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm getting a bit excited now.
So can I just ask how you initially heard about the project?
I think I read it in a paper. I can't be sure. It probably was a paper. I thought that sounds a good idea. I'll apply.
What was it that actually kind of motivated you to get involved?
To be fair, I just thought it would be a good idea. I'm never going to get it, but I'll try. And I'll be stuck in between two other people, and it won't matter what I do, even if I just stand there for an hour. But sort of snowballed a little bit with me being the last one. I had to think of something to do.
How did you feel when you found out that you had a place?
So excited that I actually deleted it from my junk mailbox, and then I was running around trying to find somebody to speak to get the application back again. And it was then that I found out I was the last one as well. So
could you talk a little bit about your ideas for your hour today?
I basically found out I had the hour, and I batted a couple of ideas around my friends and family, and it was my dad who came up with the idea for the Hillsborough Justice Campaign. The hour's called 96 Lives, and rather than just saying each victim's name, we've done a little bio on each person. So it's a lot more personal. We learn about their hopes and their dreams and who they loved and who loved them. So we remember the person rather than just 96 lives. And it's 20 years this year, 20th anniversary of Hillsborough, so it's a lot more relevant. Well, it's always relevant, so I think it can't be forgotten. But it's nice to keep it in the media as well.
Could you talk a little bit about the charity?
There's no one charity. There's three charities. There's the Hillsborough Justice Campaign, the Hillsborough Family Support Group, and Hope for Hillsborough. And they're basically all wanting a fair trial regarding the 96 that died. Lord Justice Taylor said it was the police to blame, but nobody lost a day's wage or lost any liberties about it. So they just want to each case to be looked at individually, especially with Anne Williams, whose son Kevin died. The cut-off point, the coroner said, was 3:15. Kevin was talking and breathing to a off-duty policewoman at, I think, about 4:00. Obviously evidence isn't the same, and she wants a full inquiry about that.
So can you just briefly discuss the case?
Basically, the coroner said it was accidental death, and every victim that died that day died at 3:15. There was no sort of leeway on it. Kevin Williams was talking to an off-duty policewoman who was dealing with him at the time, and he was it was about 3:45. He was still talking to this woman. When it came to the coroner, that wasn't brought up at all in the inquest. It was just flat 3:15. Everybody was dead. So Anne Williams is basically saying, due to lack of care rather than accident, he died, because only one ambulance made it onto the pitch. There was about 7-8 outside, but they didn't get onto the field to help anybody.
Why is this something that you feel so strongly about?
I'm from Liverpool originally. It still is quite a big thing for Liverpool fans, for Liverpoolians. And I think it needs to be finalised. I mean, 20 years on, it's to just still be waiting and fighting for the families are still trying to go through courts to get an inquiry done. So I think it needs to be kept in the media.
Why do you think you have not yet had that closure?
I don't know. There's reports that haven't, or not all the evidence has been released. Videotapes went missing. There's so many things. I'm just not even up to date with everything, but I really don't know.
Do you think there's something quite untoward about the whole thing?
Yes, the police, well, I feel awful by this, like, police were lying, and they said that the fans forced the gates, and basically the police lost control of the situation, and they opened the gates to an already full pen without, like, siphoning them off to the empty pens on either side. So they lied to the FA saying that they forced the gates, tapes went missing. So, yeah, I don't think I should say something dodgy is going on, but it's not, everything's come to light.
So how exactly are you planning on showing this, demonstrating this from the plinth?
I'm not really demonstrating this. I'm demonstrating that 96 people died, and we just remember 96 rather than actually the people that it involved and their families. Each of them had passions and pastimes, not just football, and these are things that we've forgotten, really. So
what exactly are you taking up there with you?
96 balloons, which is going to be released one after each story, and that's about it at the moment. Some flags, and that's it. And me.
Can I get you to talk a little bit about your background? Kind of what do you do for a living?
I'm from Liverpool originally. I moved up to Darlington in the northeast about 5 years ago. I'm a medical photographer, so I work in the hospitals taking photographs of patients for treatment plans, diagnosis, teaching purposes. And that's about it, really.
So where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Liverpool. I grew up in Liverpool. I moved from there when I was 25, went to university in Stoke-on-Trent to do a design photography degree. That's it. I haven't got a very exciting life. I've got a brother and sister, older brother and sister. I'm the baby of the family. So.
What would you say your main interests are?
Photography. At the moment, I spend every weekend near enough playing with my nieces and nephews. I had three nieces all in 1 year. So we've got Grace and we've got Evie Amelie, which are twins. And my brother had a little boy 3 weeks ago, Isaac. So they take up my time. And planning a trip, I hope to take a year out to go travelling for a year. So I'm planning that.
Where else are you planning to go travelling?
India, Vietnam, Cambodia, if I have the money, Japan. I've got friends in Australia, so I'm going there to see them. And basically, I've got to Australia and that's about it. I don't know if to go to South America or Africa, but it's looking to South America at the moment. I just have to see how much money I've got, really, get one of those world tickets and then go.
Amazing. And what is it that's made you kind of want to get out there, travel?
I had cancer when I was 21, and I had, was receiving treatment for 2 years. So I sort of missed, I had that midway through my university. So I left university in my second year and went back after 2 years. So I sort of missed out on my standard gap year after university because I went straight to work. So I just thought I'd go travelling, take a year out, like a sabbatical, and go take my chance now. I'm not getting any younger.
So having cancer at such a young age, how did that kind of affect you?
Not really that much. It sounds really, I was, when I got diagnosed the second time, because I was diagnosed the first time, really upset. And then I went into remission, got diagnosed the second time. And the main thing that I was more upset about was that I had Madonna tickets and I couldn't go. And the doctor said, no, you really can't go. And I was like, but I took a day off work and I have Madonna tickets. And they're like, no, you can't go. You can't be in the crowd. I was like, no. So it sounds really like I just didn't care. But I'd already gone through it the year before. At 21, I wasn't expecting it. You feel indestructible at 21. And it was quite a shock. I don't drink, I don't smoke. It's just one of those things. It's a Hodgkin's disease, which they say is quite a common cancer in girls of that age. I think it's 15 to 21. It's the second most common cancer in that age group.
Okay. What kind of effect did that have on your family for kind of helping you?
We are quite close. My mum looked after me, took me to hospital and whatnot. My dad works abroad, so he came back and he spent a longer visit in the country rather than the standard like 3 weeks. And my sister came up from London a fair bit. It was like when the three of us were in the appointment, it was like see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil sort of thing. So a lot of questions like going around the family about what I was going to do regarding children. It's like 21, you're not ready for children, but they offered me the chance to have a baby there and then. I was just like, no thank you, it's like 21. It's happened sort of thing. Can't just got on with it really. Yeah.
Do you think you appreciate your current kind of health state?
Yes.
A lot more?
Yes, definitely. Getting very paranoid around March time, which is when I got diagnosed, because it literally happened overnight. I got a lump in my neck, literally overnight. So yeah, a lot more aware. Not scared to go to the doctor about silly things. Checking moles, especially being a medical photographer, I have to photograph moles for mapping, so checking my moles and what have you. So yeah, and I'm constantly on at my sister and my brother to check the moles and to check themselves as well. So, yeah.
So just to go back to your hour on the plinth, what are your hopes, fears, expectations?
I'm scared I'm going to start crying with the stories because they're quite upsetting. I'm scared I'm going to fumble lines and then just blurt everything out as quickly as I can. Expectations, I have none at all. If people want to contact their MPs to ask for a fair inquiry, then that'd be great. But I just want to bring to light that there are 96 people whose families lost them. And that's about it really. Yeah, I'm quite excited now though.
So are you wanting, obviously there's going to be quite a few people out there, are you wanting to interact with people?
I didn't think about that. I'm worried that I've only got an hour, got 96 stories to go through plus an introduction, and I have to set up. So if people ask me questions, it will be like a quick like reply back and but get on with what I've got written.
Do you think this experience will have any kind of effect on you?
I have a fear of public speaking, if you can believe that, seeing as I natter away quite happily. But on, obviously, sole attention and public speaking, it's not... I'm quite scared of it. So hopefully this will get me over that fear.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, that's everything. Thank you.